All right, good morning, everybody. 11:15, Monday, November 29th, end of November. We are fastly approaching the end here. So a couple of things. As I was telling you guys this morning, I was working on those videos and I managed to get the next one up and I got, I'll have to show you where those are. And maybe I'll just take a second just to show you kind of where things are sitting video wise and where those are going. And I'm going to get a couple more up today. Let me, I need Safari and I need a new page here. Okay, dot study. Come on, mouse. And I can screen share that. So back to Zoom, screen share, Safari. Okay, so on the Chem12BL page, under the laboratory resources, it says experiment videos. Here on experiment videos, there was the first one that you watched that was all the triphenyl methanol. That was the Grignard one. The one for benzoic acid are going right after that. So I'm breaking it up into synthesis of benzoin, oxidation to benzyl, and then the catalyzed isomerization to benzoic acid. So they'll all flow through here. And I've got them up on YouTube too, so you can watch them. If they pull down easier on YouTube, you can watch them there. They're the same size regardless in terms of megabytes. And so they should play fairly smoothly. And I'm breaking them kind of up into 15-minute chunks to make it a little bit easier to watch. And similar to what I did up here, they had some music to them and things and fast forward where appropriate. And so I'm doing the same thing through those. And I'll link them through the Canvas shell as well to be able to go in and watch those. Okay. The next thing is you guys have done all the spectroscopy work. And so I'm going to put up the spectroscopy exam and I'm going to make that available through today and through this weekend. So it'll all be through this week. So I'll make that available in Canvas as well. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is aromaticity, what we're doing today. So let me start a screen share and go to the iPad. Come on, little iPad. Okay, so everything that we were doing last time was aromaticity, was looking at what makes a molecule aromatic. This week, it is going to be reactions. So in what makes something aromatic, we spent a lot of time looking at molecular orbital theory and Frost circle in particular, and looking at the arrangement of the electrons within those molecules and understanding that that stability of aromaticity came from a filling of the bonding molecular orbitals. Now, when we start looking at reactions of aromatic molecules, there's really only two that we follow pretty much. There's a Birch reduction. And then electrophilic aromatic substitution. out of the two of them, it is electrophilic aromatic substitution that we'll spend the most time on. So the birch reduction is fairly small. Handy, but there's not a whole lot to study within the birch reduction. So birch, when we look at this, it starts from the aromatic ring and it looks very similar to some other reactions that we've had, two other reactions, in fact. It uses sodium and liquid ammonia. It's like the dissolving metals. In fact, it's almost identical to dissolving metals. The only difference is that we also have methanol that's within this reaction. And what it does is it reduces the aromatic ring system down to a diene. But it's a 1,2,3,4,1,4 diene. So it makes 1,4 dienes out of the aromatic molecule. And you think, well, why would I want to do that? Well, sometimes the aromatic molecule is not really what we want. Sometimes we want to be able to take a benzene ring and to be able to turn it into a cyclohexane to do things with it. And so that's what the birch reduction does. And it works very similar to the dissolving metals reaction in the way that we've looked at that before. So the mechanism starts off with a sodium free radical. And it's a free radical reaction. What's happening here is the electrons that are in one of the double bonds here breaks off. The sodium gives its electron to the aromatic ring system, becoming a sodium cation. And we end up with a lone pair and a free radical on the same molecule. So this now becomes an anion. So this is a radical anion. And we get the sodium cation as the counterion. And the radical and the anion are repulsive to each other. When you have electrons that are in close proximity to each other, because of the like charges, they repel one another. And so what we wind up getting out of this is a rearrangement of the electrons to try to put the free radical and the negative charge as far apart from each other as they can. So these lone pairs push in, and these guys push out, and this is a resonance contributor that is the major resonance contributor, and it sets up the condition that you can already see that we have the 1,4 diene already starting to form here, which just happens because of the repulsion of the electrons in the system. From this point, this is where the methanol comes in. The methanol is a proton source. So the anion takes the proton. And in taking the proton, the sodium, now the counterion, goes away with the methanol. And we end up with a protonated system here now. We have the double bonds and we have the free radical. The sodium cation becomes the counter ion to the methoxide. Another sodium atom then donates its electron. And we generate again an anion. Another methanol, then donates a proton, And the reaction's over. And you get two equivalents of the sodium methoxide that's in there. So that's the Birch reduction. The only other thing about the Birch reduction, which is kind of neat, is that if there happens to be an alkyl group or a substituent on the aromatic ring system, that the reduction is specific. It's regiospecific. So that if we have an R group here, and we go through and do the reduction, that when it reduces down, the double bond is always on the R group or on the same carbon or attached to the same carbon of the R group. So it doesn't end up with a hydrogen in that position, or I should say that the alkyl group doesn't end up sp3, it always ends up sp2 where the alkyl group is. And there's probably, I don't usually play with the mechanistic reasons of why that's true, but it reduces down that way generally. And that's pretty much as we do with the Birch reduction. It's just the ability to be able to take an aromatic ring and reduce it down into a 1,4 cyclopentadiene cyclohexadiene. And synthetic utility of that just isn't quite as great as the synthetic utility of the electrophilic aromatic substitution. So we spend a lot more time on that. And there's a lot more to understand in the electrophilic aromatic substitution. So let's dive into that and start looking at that instead. We'll spend most of our time on the electrophilic aromatic substitution. So electrophilic aromatic substitution, one of the main people who did work in this area was Joe Bennett. And Joe Bennett was a chemist, one of the first chemists that was hired at UCSC when UCSC first started. Joe Bennett was an amazing, amazing individual. And later in his life, as I was a grad student, Joe was already in his 80s, and Joe had had brain cancer and had had surgery to remove the brain cancer. He decided that that he had forgotten most of the chemistry that he had ever known. And he would come sit in graduate classes, and he would just show up in the graduate classes, and he would take notes and relearning much of the chemistry that he had known all his life. But electrophilic aromatic substitution, when you read it in the textbook, has no attribution to the chemist that that actually did a lot of that work, and that was Joe Bennett. And the reason that it has no attribution is because it's one of those chemical reactions that is so fundamental and so important that it is just in every textbook, and it just doesn't have an attribution. It doesn't have a name component to it, like many of the other reactions that we study. But it was Joseph Bennett who did most of this work in electrophilic aromatic substitution, and just an amazing individual. All right, so let's look at some of what we know about these reactions, and then we'll start pulling it together. So we're going to do sort of an overview here of different reactions. If we take an aromatic ring system and we brominate this, it takes a catalyst to be able to brominate it. Usually it's iron. So it's usually ferric chloride or sometimes aluminum chloride. These are Lewis acid catalysts. And what we see is that the bromine doesn't brominate it in the way that we think of. It substitutes for a proton. So if you think about, there was a proton that was here and we have lost the proton. It does that not only once, but it can do it multiple times. And in different substitution patterns. So we see the para-substituted, disubstituted, and we see the ortho-disubstituted. So this one is para, this one is ortho, and this one is major, but we get a minor amount of the para, and we get a trace amount of the ortho, and we get no meta. Just interesting to think about. So why might that be the case?
And only two at the most, no more than that.
I suppose you could get a third, but it would be very, very tiny to see a tri-substituted. And if we did get tri-substituted, it would be in the most likely both in the ortho positions. Okay, if we take the aromatic ring system and we nitrate it, so we use nitric acid, also requires sulfuric acid and about 60 degrees Celsius, then we can nitrate the aromatic ring system. And it replaces the proton again. And we can get a nitro group in there. Byproduct that comes out of this is water. Byproduct that came out of these guys was HBr. So we can get nitrobenzene. But it only nitrates once, and we don't see multiple nitrations. If we take the aromatic ring system and we put a substituent on here to begin with, and then we brominate, and we do this in acetic acid, I'm going to use the structure for acetic acid rather than the name. So the solvent here would be acetic acid, 30 degrees Celsius. Then what we see is that we get two different products. It brominates para to the hydroxyl group and ortho to the hydroxyl group. This is about 88%, 12%. If we take that same phenol and we treat it with bromine, not in acetic acid this time, but in water. So just changing the solvent from acetic acid to water. Still, we're pretty mild on temperature, only 20 degrees C. It brominates, but now it brominates like crazy. And it brominates both in the ortho positions and in the para position. And it brominates three times. And in fact, this precipitates out as a solid. So this actually increased the reaction. And if we take and we look at already having a nitro group present. And we try to further nitrate this. We have to really turn the heat up on it. We have to take this up to 100 degrees C, and it takes quite a long time, but you can further nitrate it. And when it does, it goes into the meta position. So this one is hard, very slow reaction. So having a hydroxyl group here in this position and we brominate it, the reaction goes really fast. Having a nitro group and trying to nitrate it is very hard and very slow. Conversely, going back to that hydroxyl group, if we take this guy and try to nitrate it, and we do HNO3, and we do it in water, 20 degrees Celsius, this thing goes really fast. And it makes two different products. And the ratios of those products are about 60% to 40%. So this is the para and the ortho. So looking through these, as we go through and we look at these data, I'm giving you a whole bunch of reactions here now. First off, just showing what we can do, that we can brominate it. And when we brominate it, we find that major is a single bromination, but we can get dibromination, it's para and ortho. Most of the reactions, when we look through here and we look at substituents, when we're putting multiple substituents on, we're seeing para and ortho. That almost all of them seem to go para and ortho. And that the data that's on this last page, hydroxyl group in water seems to make this reaction go really fast. Nitro group seems to slow this reaction down. Putting a hydroxyl group in there, I can nitrate it. This makes it go faster. But again, I'm seeing a para substitution and an ortho substitution. The only place where I see a meta substitution is this one reaction. So only this one reaction, this is the only one showing meta substitution. So what we're seeing here is a series of data that is showing that some groups, like hydroxyl group, speed the reaction up. Some groups, like the nitro, slow the reaction down. Most dye substitutions go ortho para. Very few dye substitutions go meta. And so the question then is, what is going on in all of this? How is this reaction working? And how do we explain all of these observations? How do we put all this together and tease all of this out? So the first thing that we want to know, if we're going to try to understand these chemical reactions, what is the reaction mechanism, right? Because it's not until we actually understand the reaction mechanism that we might have any hopes of trying to understand what's actually taking place here. Travis, would you?
Can you scroll up just a little bit?
Yeah.
Just one more little bit. Yeah. Okay. So it was an NO2 group.
Yeah.
So the only one that had the meta substitution was the benzene, was the nitrobenzene.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that's key. The question is, why is nitrobenzene the only one that's demonstrating a meta substitution and all the others are demonstrating ortho and para substitution? That's exactly the question. Cool. So let's take a look at the reaction mechanism and let's start to dig into it. We're going to see that I've only shown you hydroxyl, bromide, nitro. There are dozens of different substituents that we can do with this, and probably hundreds of permutations. And so the question is, can we understand the underlying mechanism, and can we understand what different functional groups do to the mechanism in order to understand which direction it's going to go? So there's a whole bunch of questions here that we want to be able to answer and we want to be able to look at, but they all stem from the mechanism. And I think one of the reasons we spend so much more time on this reaction is, like I said, there's tons of permutations of the reaction, but also it's sort of quintessential organic chemistry of understanding from the mechanism so that you can do predictions and understand how these reactions actually work. Okay, first off, why do we generally need the Lewis acid? What does the Lewis acid usually do? All right, in our aromatic ring system, the aromatic ring system is functioning as the nucleophile. And the halogen, in terms of the bromide, is functioning as the electrophile. But this is true, I mean, think about the name. It's electrophilic aromatic substitution. So in that, what we're doing is we're substituting the aromatic ring with an electrophile. So this is the electrophile, and the aromatic ring is always going to function as the nucleophile. Now, we would say that the bromide is nonpolar, and it is. It's nonpolar. So we need something to help to polarize it, and that's what the metal does. So these metals that we use that usually have a charge on them, let's say like a 3+ cation, because that's true for the iron and the aluminum that we were looking at. And these guys have halogens on them, and they're extremely electron deficient. They bind to the bromide as a Lewis acid. And as a Lewis acid, what that does is it stresses the bromine. And it makes this extremely positive. So the electrons have pushed over essentially into the other bromine in order to be able to make this bond with the metal. And what that does is it really polarizes the bromine bond. It activates the Br2. Making a stronger electrophile. Okay, once that happens, then the aromatic ring can function as a nucleophile. So we have a strong partial positive. We can draw this metal here if we want. The aromatic ring then uses one of the double bonds to reach out and attack the bromine. When it attacks the bromine like that, it makes a complex where the proton and the bromine are still attached, but you've broken the double bond. So on the opposite side of the double bond, you have a positive charge. So you have a carbocation. So we're creating essentially a carbocation. And this is a resonance stabilized carbocation. So this carbocation, we can draw the resonance contributors for it. And we're going to have three resonance contributors. I'll draw one more. So this is a resonance stabilized carbocation. And then the last part of this is that bromide or some other species in solution functions as a base, pulling the proton and dumping the electrons back in to regenerate the aromatic ring. And the aromatic ring always regenerates because of the stability of aromaticity. So aromatic molecules are so stable that they're going to try to do everything they can to regain that aromaticity. And so the base subtracts the proton, and that's why we call it substitution, because we have substituted the bromide for the proton. So electrophilic aromatic substitution. All right, so the mechanism is not that challenging. The mechanism is nucleophile attacks electrophile. We generate a resonance stabilized carbocation. And then we get abstraction of the proton by a base and regeneration of the aromaticity. Pretty simple as things go. But the complexity happens when we have different groups attached to the halogen. So how do different substituents affect the reaction? In other words, what happens when I have a substituent here, R, and I look at doing Br2 with some metal, FeCl3, and how does this affect the mechanism? So when that R group is on there, and I don't mean just an alkyl group, I mean any substituent, how do these different substituents affect the reaction? And now that we know what the mechanism isn't going to change. What changes is, what is the effect of that mechanism? So if we look at the chemical reaction and we take this reaction and we draw a energy diagram. For electrophilic aromatic substitution, EAS reaction. It goes through a carbocation, and because it's going through the carbocation, we get that stable carbocation component, right? So we've got to think about what happens here. We are going to reach out, we're going to grab the electrophile, we go through the carbocation, and then there's a deprotonation. So these look very similar to sort of SN1E1 reactions, really E1 reactions, right? Because in an E1 reaction, we have the carbocation and then we pull a proton, the elimination, in order to get the elimination. So these really look a lot like the E1 reactions. We start off down here at some point. We go through a transition state to a carbocation, and then there's another activation energy, and then a final product, which we're going to assume that the final product is more stable. So I'm going to make an energy diagram here. And we'll make it look like an E1 type reaction. And sitting in this position will be the carbocation. So I'm going to put R up here. I'm going to put the hydrogen and the halogen in there. And then I'll put the positive charge in this molecule. This is the transition state, the activation energy. This is the rate determining step. And then we have another small transition state that's here. And then the final product, where we get the R group. And I'm going to put the halogen in there in some position. Plus, we end up with HX. And over here, we started with the R group, and presumably we started with X2. And we have X minus sitting up here still. So this is our overall energy diagram. When we look at an energy diagram like this, and we want to understand how a reaction proceeds, how fast a reaction proceeds, what is it that we look at to understand how fast a reaction proceeds? I mean, what do we need to assess? Do we need to assess the reactants, the intermediate, the product, the transition states? What is it that we need to look at here in order to understand how this reaction really works?
For speed.
Well, for speed, yes. Let's say for the rate of the reaction.
You're supposed to look at the first big hump, right?
We're supposed to look at the first transition state. So yeah, the key point here is, what does this transition state look like? Because that's my activation energy that determines how fast the reaction goes. Go ahead, Travis.
I was just trying to answer. So do you look at conditions like temperature, concentrations, things like that to determine to get to that transition state?
The transition state, the temperature, other conditions, the solvent, those types of things can have an effect on the amount of energy that's in the system in order to achieve that transition state, but they generally don't affect what the transition state looks like. So in order to know what is going to speed this up and what is going to speed this down? I need to know what this transition state looks like. And I need to know that in order to know what's going to affect this thing. So how do I know what this transition state looks like? How do I get an idea of what the transition state actually looks like for this reaction? You guys remember a little thing called Hammond postulate? Hammond tells us that the transition state will most closely resemble the side that it is closest in energy to. So a transition state is always spanned by two sides. It's spanned by the product and by the reactants. And so whichever side the transition state is closer in energy to, in this case, it's closer in energy to the products. And I mean the intermediate product. So it's closer in energy here. This is what it's going to resemble. So by Hammond, the transition state is going to resemble the carbocation intermediate. Because that's the side that it's closest in energy to. So really to understand what is going to speed this reaction up and what is going to slow this reaction down, in terms of R groups, I need to understand what is going to stabilize that carbocation and what's going to destabilize that carbocation. So now I can ask a question. I can say, all right, I can look at this carbocation as my intermediate. So the intermediate is this. And the carbocation I can place in a number of positions. It's resonance stabilized. So it really has a couple of resonance contributors that I can draw. And maybe I should draw all three. So I'll just draw all three real quick, because this is the actual nature of the intermediate. And now I can ask some questions. I can ask, what sort of R group will stabilize this? So think about the different types of R groups. What type of R group might stabilize this carbocation? And the opposite of that is, what sort of R group might destabilize? Can you look at that carbocation and in particular at the position where the R group is here and where the carbocation is here and think about what sort of group might stabilize that carbocation, make that carbocation more stable?
I'd say if it's electronegative, it'll be more stable.
If it's electronegative. So an electronegative group, something that is electronegative, usually is something that is an electron withdrawing group.
Right.
I'm not sure if that's what you mean.
I guess I got it backwards, didn't I?
I think you did. Instead of electronegative, what we want is something that has electron density that can donate it. So in other words, what we want is here, we want an R group that is equal to an electron donating group. And something that is an electron donating group, something that may have electrons like this, that can donate those electrons, can help to spread out that charge. And spreading out that charge can help to stabilize it. So an electron donating group will help to stabilize it. The opposite of that, something that would destabilize it, is a strong electron withdrawing group, something that can't donate, that is going to pull electrons. So if R equals an electron withdrawing group, then what we're going to get is, and one of the best sort of electron withdrawing groups that I can think of to put here is to put like a carbonyl on it that already has a really strong partial positive, right? And so that's next to this C plus, and that's going to withdraw electron density from this. It's going to make the C plus even bigger, and that's going to destabilize it. So usually what we've done is we've coded these electron donating groups as blue and these electron withdrawing groups as red. And we're going to find that electron donating groups, what's going to happen here is that if R is an electron donating group, when R equals electron donating group, it is going to pull the energy of this system down and make it more stable. And whatever happens to that intermediate, the same thing is going to happen to the transition state. So electron donating groups are going to lower the activation energy. And if I change that R group and I make that R group into an electron withdrawing group, then what that's going to do is that's going to raise the energy of this system, increasing the energy of the carbocation. And that is likewise going to raise the energy of the transition state and slow the reaction down. And so we're using Hammond postulate as an entire argument to understand what is going to raise the energy of the system and what is going to lower the energy of the system. And how that's going to work. So now, what's really cool about these reactions is that for the first time, we have a reaction that is very strongly affected by electron withdrawing groups and electron donating groups. And these groups, this can actually be a testing ground to put a functional group on the aromatic molecule and see how fast the reaction goes. And we can actually rank the electron withdrawing groups and the electron donating groups. And we can get a ranking of how strong an electron withdrawing group and an electron donating group it actually is. So here's what we find. This is what's really cool that comes out of this, is that we find that activating groups these are groups that are electron donating groups that speed the reaction up. These are also what are called orthoparadirectors. In order of increasing, or actually I'm going to say in order of decreasing, so we're going to start with the strongest. The strongest is amines and R2s. So this will be strongest. going down to weakest. NH2, primary amines, not quite as strong. Hydroxyls, less than amines. Methoxy or ethers are below alcohols. Amides and then ethers, excuse me, esters connected through their oxygen. Alkyl groups and then down below this, which I'm going to change color. These are chlorides, bromides, and iodides. And these are mildly deactivating. They slow the reaction down. But orthopara-directors. So they fall on this list. So these are our activating groups. And strongest at the top. On the other side, on the flip side, we're going to have deactivating groups. These are going to be electron withdrawing groups. These are going to slow the reaction down. These are also meta-directors instead of orthopara. So these group, with the strongest deactivating, I'm going to put the strongest at the top. The strongest deactivating group that we have is a nitrogen group as well, but this is R3 with a positive charge. This is a quat salt. This is an amine that has four R groups, technically, because it's bound to the aromatic ring system. And because of that, it has a permanent positive charge and can't ever let go of that permanent positive charge. Another really strong electron withdrawing group that we have is the nitro group. So I always lean towards writing it just straight NO2, but then we lose the fact that a nitro group has a positive charge on the nitrogen if we do that. And so I kind of like to draw it out so that you see it. Cyano groups. Sulfuric acid groups. I'm going to write these out as well in structural form and then put the abbreviation there. So this is SO3H. Aldehydes. Ketones. Carboxylic acids. But now it's based on their connectivity and on the side in which they're connected. So when we start to look at esters, esters are in this group, but notice that the ester is connected through the carbonyl side this time, as opposed to the oxygen side on the other side. Amides also fit in this list. Connected through their carbonyl. And so all of these are deactivating groups and meta directors in order of increasing strength of how strong an electron withdrawing group they are. And these are all found, or at least their strength is found, by competing in these reactions to try to figure out what's going on. So when we look at this, this makes sense. Nitrogen with a positive charge, nitrogen with a positive charge, these are strong electron withdrawing groups. SP, hybridized carbon, almost as strong as an oxygen in terms of an electron withdrawing group. A sulfur with three oxygens connected to it. Carbonyls with the partial positive, aldehyde, ketone, carboxylic acid, ester connected through the carbonyl, amide connected through the carbonyl, all of these with partial positives at the carbonyl, and the oxygen does not allow for resonance electron donation. So all of these are electron withdrawing groups, where on the other side here, we have free lone pairs, nitrogen lone pair, oxygen lone pair, oxygen lone pair, nitrogen lone pair, oxygen lone pair, alkyl by inductively electron donating. And then these guys down here, the halogens, I'll remind you that they have lone pairs of electrons as well. And it's those lone pair donations that allow them to be orthopara directors, but mildly deactivating. So now we have this list, but the question then becomes, why are some of these orthopara directors? And why are the deactivating ones meta directors? So it can't be just that one is activating and one is deactivating. What is it about the mechanism that allows an electron donating group to be an orthopara director and a deactivating group to be a meta director? How does that part actually work? That's what we need to answer. So deeper dive. How does electron donating group versus electron withdrawing group translate into orthopara versus meta director? So this is the next part. Let's take a look at an electron donating group. And we can pick any of the electron donating groups. And we can ask, how does an electron donating group become an orthopara director? So let's first choose electron donating group. And we'll choose the example of maybe a phenol. As a good electron donating group. And we can go ahead and use bromination. As our example. And in order to do this, what we need to do is we need to explore the three possible locations. We need to explore ortho, we need to explore meta, and we need to explore para, and then show why ortho and para are lower in energy than meta substitution. So the first thing that we'll do is we'll look at ortho. So here's the ortho substitution. And where the positive charge results. And our job is to assess the stability of that guy. Let me draw, before we do that, let me draw the meta next. and then I'll draw the para. And then we can tackle each one of them. Okay, so we have the ortho, the meta, and the para. And we want to know which one of these is most stable. So what is it that I need to assess, that I need to look at when I've drawn these? How do I assess stability for these different carbocations? This goes right back to first semester, some of the first problems that we've ever dealt with in organic chemistry. We're trying to figure out which of these carbocations is the most stable. So we need to look at resonance and adductive effects in each one of these carbocations. And really, because there are resonance effects, the resonance are more important than the induction. So we take a look at the different resonance effects. So that means that I've got to draw all the resonance contributors for each one of these. So I've got to take the time, sit down, and draw it out, and there is no other way. So we look at the resonance contribution by each one of these. And the first thing is the resonance donation by the oxygen. Putting the positive charge onto the oxygen. Second one is movement of the electrons. Putting the positive charge para to where the bromine substituted. And finally, one more resonance contributor. I think I can do better than this. Do these fast switches up here. Maybe I can't. I'm gonna go back to black. I need to get blue in there too. Okay, there's the first set. So taking a look at that first set, A, B, C, and D, any idea which one of those is the most stable out of A, B, C, and D?
Is it A?
Why?
Because the positive charge residing next to that oxygen right there, and that oxygen's ability to function as an electron donating group.
Good. Okay, so that's part. Let me give you the rules. More covalent bonds. Better than less. a positive charge on more, I should say negative charge on more electronegative element, but positive charge on more electropositive element. So in negative ones, negative charge on more electronegative element, or reverse, less separation of charge, is better. So those are sort of like the three main rules that we have. So if we count, we can count the number of double bonds as an indicator of how many covalent bonds something has, because they're going to have all the same sigma bonds. We're really just moving the pi bonds. And so this one has two pi bonds, this one has three, this one has two, this one has two. So when we look at the number of bonds that something has, the more covalent bonds it has, the more stable it is. The one that has more covalent bonds would be this guy here. Now we can look at positive charge. This would be positive on carbon, positive on oxygen, positive on carbon, positive on carbon. But because this is the first rule, this one, B, would actually be the most stable. And it has to do with the number of covalent bonds that it has. So why is the number of covalent bonds more important than anything else? And the answer is that when I look at this one, the octet rule is broken for carbon. When carbon has a positive charge, it violates the octet rule. It has 2, 4, 6 electrons only. When oxygen gets a positive charge, it does so by maintaining the lone pair still, and it has 2, 4, 6, 8. It has an octet. There's no broken octets in this resonance contributor. And so it's really going to the octet rule that tells us about which one of these is the most stable, that it's the one that violates the octet rule to the least degree. And so Travis, yeah, it's the oxygen is the electron donating group, but it's where it's actually donating that makes it more important. So we just got to go that one step further.
I guess it was the positive charge in the oxygen that was throwing me off, because we've never wanted to see that.
Definitely. Definitely that's what was throwing me. And that's why I wanted to make a point of it, is that I wanted to go back to when oxygen has a positive charge, it's not violating the octet rule to do so. Yeah, it looks bad because oxygen is electronegative and we think, God, it doesn't want to have that positive charge. That's a horrible thing. But it's better than carbon violating the octet rule. And so that's what it comes down to, is that octet violation. That's why I'm making such a big deal out of it. I wanted to hammer it home. Okay, so the most stable one is that one where the oxygen takes on the positive charge. Okay, watch what happens in the meta position here now. In the meta position, what I can do is I can take the double bond and I can move it around. Oop, come on, don't turn on me. I can move the double bonds around. And the positive charge will go para to where the bromine substituted. And if I do that again, and I move that positive charge again, I can get that positive charge ortho to where the bromine substituted. But I can never get it under the oxygen. And so what happens is I only get three resonance contributors. And with only three resonance contributors, this guy just isn't as stable as the one with four resonance contributors. And I never get that major resonance contributor where the positive charge falls on the oxygen. And in fact, what happens here is because oxygen can't contribute directly to where the positive charge is going, the oxygen turns from an electron donating group into an electron withdrawing group. So the OH here actually acts as an electron withdrawing group by induction. So this has only three resonance contributors. And the OH is destabilizing by induction, whereas before it was acting as an electron donating group. Now watch what happens when I go to para. When I go to para, we start off in our resonance contributors. And the first contributor places the positive charge directly underneath the oxygen, allowing the oxygen to directly donate. And there's that same resonance contributor. And then to the other side. Okay, and so once again, this contributor becomes the major one. And I've got four resonance contributors again. So if I back out and I look at sort of like the overall picture of this, when I have an electron donating group, ortho and para are highly stabilized by this resonance contributor, where the electron donating group directly contributes. It adds a fourth resonance contributor and makes the ortho and the para substituents or substitution much lower in energy, bringing down the activation energy barrier. And meta is discouraged because the electron donating group switches in the meta position and functions more like an electron withdrawing group through induction. And so this is why we see ortho and para directors, is because that electron donating group makes it an ortho-para director, because those are the most stable intermediates. What that does is that brings down that activation energy barrier, lowering that activation energy barrier for the transition state, because it's linked through Hammond postulate to the activation energy, or not the activation energy, but the stability, the overall stability of the intermediate that is formed. All right. What I'd like to do is I'd like to make that same argument for the meta one. But I've got 4 minutes. Maybe I can draw it in the 4 minutes. Let me show the electron withdrawing group. How did I label this one? Electron withdrawing group example. This one now, a meta director. Let's see if I can do it quickly enough. So what we need to do is we need to take an electron withdrawing group now Let's take a nitrogen that is got four groups on it and a positive charge. And we need to try to brominate this, same thing. And look at what happens. And we need to look at the ortho. We need to look at the meta, and we need to look at the para. So with these, what I can do is draw each one of them . There's the ortho, and the resonance for the ortho one and I need to put in that guy in each case. And those are all of the resonance contributors. There are three resonance contributors in each case. But notice that one of these is really, really bad. Can you pick out which one of these is the worst? If I label these as A, B and C. Now I'm not looking for the most stable, I'm looking for the least stable. Which one of these is like really bad? Really bad is where I lined up the two positive charges right next to each other. A is really bad. The positive charge is falling directly underneath the electron withdrawing group. So this one is really bad. In the same sort of symmetry here, when I go to meta, the positive charge will not fall underneath the electron withdrawing group. The positive charge will fall around it, but never directly underneath it. And so this one, in meta substitution, just never really gets that super bad resonance contributor. And because it never gets that super bad resonance contributor, it is the least bad out of a whole bunch of bad circumstances. So this one has no really bad. I mean, it has not good, but it doesn't have anything that's devastating where the two positive charges are right next to each other. And then I go back to para and I say, well, what happens with para? And what we see happens with para is that positive charge is going to fall right underneath that electron withdrawing group again. So I'll just draw these out real quick. There's the really bad one. And as we said, that one's really bad again. So when we look at this set, ortho has a problem in that the positive charges are directly underneath each other. Para has a problem where the positive charges are directly underneath each other. In the meta, the positive charges never fall directly next to each other, which makes meta the least bad. Or another way of saying the least bad is the best option. And so it's the best option out of a bunch of bad options. And so what we see is that electron withdrawing groups are meta directors because meta is the best possible location to put the positive charge so that it doesn't fall adjacent to the electron withdrawing group. Whereas ortho and para directors, electron donating groups, directly stabilize the positive charge and can do so in the ortho and para positions. And so that's the foundation of how ortho-para directors come about versus meta directors and how it translates from electron withdrawing groups into electron donating groups. So this gives us a whole bunch of things. It gives us a hierarchy of electron donating groups. It gives us a hierarchy of electron withdrawing groups. And we fundamentally understand where these groups come from. On Wednesday, what we'll do is we'll take a look at how we can actually use this now to go through and do synthesis and how we can predict whether a group is going to go ortho and para, not only for a single substituent, but for multiple substituents. In other words, how can we put one, two, or three groups onto an aromatic ring and get them in the positions where we want them? That's the next fun thing that we kind of go into is how do we use this in a synthesis way now that we know where they all come from? So that's where we go next. Okay, like I said, I am activating that exam 2 for spectroscopy. I'm putting it online. You guys have the rubric to go through and use that. I'll give it to you through Monday, through the weekend. Work together on it. And you can always hit me up in office hours if you have questions or through email if things come up.
Thanks. So what's the rest of the timeline? What's going to be next week?
Next week is, that's a good question. I will go through a little bit more stuff of synthesis stuff and figure out some appropriate assignment for finals week.
Okay.
Okay.
Very good.
Yeah. Down to the wire. Okay. I'm going to go make sure that that exam is actually turned on so you guys can see it and can get working on it.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Take care, guys.